Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and today we are broadcasting live from the Food and Farm Exploration Center in Plover. And we have a full house of great listeners, and I'm really looking forward to today's show because we're talking with three people who have been very much involved in the center here, and they're going to be telling us about it and some of the things that are going on here. Three guests for you. As I said, Dick Pavelski is the owner of Heartland Farms, a major potato and vegetable grower in the Central Sands region, and he is the founder and president of the Food and Farm Exploration Center, which opened December 2023 in Plover. Dick, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and thanks for visiting us at the Food and Farm Exploration Center, Larry.
What a great facility. Kathleen O'Leary is with us as well, transition and culture strategist for the Food and Farm Exploration Center, former CEO and executive director of Wisconsin State Fair Park. Kathleen, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you to the listener for being at the Food and Farm Exploration Center today.
And Bobby Kubish is Director of Educational Programming of the Food and Farm Exploration Center. Previously spent 23 years at UW-Stevens Point, where she served as an outreach specialist for the Wisconsin Center for Environmental Education. She was Program Manager, Interim Director of the Central Wisconsin Environmental Station as well. So, Bobby, welcome to you.
Thank you. Really happy to be here.
So these, I was remarking to them earlier, how would you find three people with more experience, the right kind of experience to head up an operation like we have here? Dick, your family's been going on for five generations here, and I think you started with your great-great-grandfather started?
The original farm was in Amherst Junction. And started in 1873 when my great-grandfather immigrated from Poland.
Man. And you had what? How many acres back then?
Well, they originally settled on 40 acres that were homesteaded and then basically grew that. And it was about 180 to 200 acres when I graduated from high school. Well, when I started on the farm. And then my father grew it to about 200 acres in the Amherst Junction area. And then again, a few years later, it got to about 600 acres as he acquired more of the neighbor's land. And then we bought another operation down in the Hancock, Wisconsin area when I graduated from high school and joined the farm, and that took us up to about 1,400 acres.
And now there's a lot more even.
Thousands. we currently and we've taken on a couple of partners as well with the Knights family and the Kennedy family, but we're now up to where we own about 13,000 acres and farm a total of about 27,000 acres.
And I understand that Heartland Farms hosted school field trips, which might have been kind of the genesis for getting this operation going.
Well, going back, basically what happened is back in 2010 as a family, and we supply a fair amount of potatoes to Frito-Lay for potato chips. And in 2010, we were at the state fair with a project that they called Fresh Rush, where we harvested potatoes at 4 o'clock in the morning on the farm, delivered them to their Beloit processing plant. They delivered them to the fairway by about 11 o'clock that morning, and we as the farmers, I and my wife and my son and his wife were there and handing out chips and basically telling the story about they are just potatoes and they're growing in Wisconsin. And people kept coming up, or several of them came up and said, no, you are not real farmers, you're just actors, there are no real farmers anymore. And and we had video of us harvesting and we had raw potatoes there, and it was kind of one of those deals that it was really kind of a wake up for me that people really don't have a sense of where their food comes from. And so that at that point in time, we went back and we did start saying, as a family, decided we needed to do something to try to reconnect people with where their food comes from. and we started doing bus tours at Heartland Farms. And it started out with just like four or five a year, and then the next thing it was 30 or 40, and then it was, you know, motorcycle groups and senior tour groups, and it really got to the point where, and I worked mostly on the government relations finance side of the farm operation when it got that large, and my partner walked in my office one day and said, you know, Dick, I know we need to do this, and it's a great project, and our employees and operators certainly enjoy talking to the children and school trips, but they were supposed to be planting potatoes today, not talking to school kids all day. And it's starting to affect our operations on the farm. And then, you know, we would actually let them get on machinery and stuff like that at the farm. And it got to the point where we had, you know, at times we'd have two or three buses up to 100 kids at a time. And it made it very apparent that if we kept trying to do it on an actual farm with live machinery, we may have some safety concerns. So that's when, as a family, we decided we wanted to try to build a mini farm to continue the mission.
And thus, over more than a year or two, we have the center here, the Food and Farm Exposition Center, and it is an amazing facility.
Yeah, this center, and most people don't understand because it was really a family project that we wanted to do and kept it that way for a while, but it was in the planning stages for 5 years before we ever really went public talking to anyone about it. And a lot of that was because, you know, as we wanted to hire the right people to do the job, we hired a firm out of California called Gyroscope to do all of the exhibits, and you'll see those downstairs if you haven't already. There's about $10 million of high-tech exhibits. I'm very fortunate. My daughter-in-law is an architectural engineer, so what you see here was pretty much designed by Alicia Pavelski, my daughter-in-law. And then basically we took it and I started talking, and it was gonna be a much smaller project. It was just gonna be kind of a family. But as I took it to other growers, and one of them being the Warzelas, where we're located now, basically said, hey, you know, why do you wanna build it down in Hancock, Wisconsin, where your farm is? You don't have all of the infrastructure like the restaurants and the hotels and things that you need to support a center of this size and scope. And he called us a couple days later and said that they would just donate whatever land we wanted, so we got to choose the site at no cost to us next to the park. They were very generous. And then as we talked to more and more farmers, and our suppliers, you know, the equipment suppliers, on the farm, the irrigation, you'll see all three major manufacturers represented here. They all realized that it was an issue that had to be addressed because we did continue to get people, and now you see it on social media all the time with people commenting that I don't know why we need farmers anymore, we just go to the grocery store for our food. And obviously as a farmer, that kind of got under my skin a bit, so we decided that we had to try to do something about it.
Well, Dick gave me a little quick tour. You could spend a few days here, I think, pretty much covering everything. And Kathleen O'Leary, you're the transition and cultural strategist. Now, what is that? First.
Oh, goodness. Well, to have a wonderful facility like this, obviously 50,000 square feet on 24 acres, and having a lot of pillars with education being at the forefront. Education, operations, certainly you're sitting in a beautiful 10,000 square foot event space. We needed to recruit people, right? So my quick story is I was, as Larry said, the CEO of Wisconsin State Fair for 6 years and spent 25 years of my career at Wisconsin State Fair Park in a variety of marketing and communications positions, and agriculture is the cornerstone of the fair industry. So I retired after those 6 years, 25 years, and just all I wanted was a summer, to have a summer with my girls. That's all I wanted. That's all I wanted. I did not have a script. I retired, so there wasn't anything adversarial by any stretch of the imagination. I left it better than I found it. And I just didn't know what was going to be next, but I didn't need to know. So I had my summer, and the architect that was part of building and designing this building called me up, and I had known him from Wisconsin State Fair Park, and he said, Kathleen, and this is the president of Epstein Ewan Architects, so they do projects all around the country. He said, Kathleen, you know, A, I hope you're enjoying your retirement, and B, I am working on one of the most incredible projects of my career. I said, oh, Rich Tennyson, tell me more. And this is, he said, it is just an amazing, amazing facility. The mission is incredible, and agriculture is at the forefront, and the education. It's about educating at every turn, connecting that disconnect of what most people don't know and understand about how our food really gets to our table. So the chapter begins, and I stepped in to do a little bit of consulting, and then was the interim executive director for a window of time, and now really that great title is more or less a little bit of everything. I would consider myself what we call a trusted advisor. So it's been 2 full years, and it has been amazing to just watch Dick Pavelski and a number of people in the community's dream become reality, the whole Pavelski family. So that is the story of who I am and why I'm here.
It's a great story. And what I like about the center, Dick said we're agnostic here. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. We are interested in small organic farmers, large organic farmers, small commercial operations, large commercial operations, every kind of manufacturer. It's an education.
Yeah, I mean, our view is that food comes from everywhere. It doesn't, you know, come from any one source. The customer is always boss, as you know, and the customer will always get, you, the end consumer, will always get what you want typically in the grocery store. So everybody, you know, all of those, that variety should be available. It's the way our society operates, and we agree with it, so.
Well, let's talk maybe a bit, Kathleen, maybe, or, well, we'll get Bobby involved here, too, but what, Kathleen, what can visitors expect to see at the Food and Farm Exploration Center? That's amazing.
Well, certainly it's, and I do, there's so many comparisons to the fair, right? The agnostic part, and this is about the industry of agriculture all being showcased here. Obviously, the focus is on crops, vegetables, potatoes. But when you come in, it's something that you could come in with all of the different genres. So you can have the littles with you, you can have your teens with you, it can be mom and dad, aunt and uncle, and grandma and grandpa. Because what you get when you get here, and for the price of admission, we talked about the exhibits. So there's 60 plus exhibits, they're all hands-on, they're all immersive, there's learning behind everything and every one of them, and that's obviously how that resonates a little bit better when you understand something because you're doing it. So when you enter into the Food and Farm Exploration Center, number one, it's a beautiful place, if I think that all of you would agree. And it's a very welcoming. So the foyer is where we have lecture series and where we have tot time. So the parents are, you know, that the kids are being read to. We have a colorful plate cafe that is just wonderful. Breakfast and lunches and everything is locally sourced. Healthy, obviously, we have 4 demonstration fields, so we actually would use our produce that we harvest in the demonstration fields in the Colorful Plate Cafe. But you move through the Exploration Center and you move into the kitchen lab. And Bobby's going to talk a little bit about that, but that is just, again, another interactive space, place where you can do culinary events. We work closely with Midstate. We work closely with all of the colleges, so UW-Madison, UW-Cal's, UW-Stevens Point, all the surrounding technical colleges, and Midstate is one of our partners that we're working with on a lot of the programming that we do in the kitchen lab. And then you move into the Ag STEM Gallery, the pivotal part of the whole Exploration Center. There's a side that's seedlings, and that's for our little learners, right? That's going to take them through. They have a grocery store and how to see the produce on the perimeter of the stores, getting that feel. There's a food truck. There's a kitchen. So, again, hands-on, involved. Mom and dad are involved. Everybody's involved with not only teaching but learning themselves, right? So then you move into the Ag STEM Gallery, and that is where it takes you through cultivation, irrigation, certainly the harvest process, everything about soils and what soils are good for what crops and those type of things. And then it's really great about what happens when it comes out of the ground. Because that, too, is what people just do not understand, not only the complexity, but what it takes. So the optical sorters, getting them out, making sure that the good ones are kept and the other ones are thrown away. And then the storage. And then is it frozen? Is it fresh? Are we canning? What are we doing? So that has a whole process. And then it takes you through the logistics of travel. So is it a short haul? Is it a long haul? So it goes through the whole process. And again, everybody's learning. Everybody's having fun. There's one great one where it's on the transportation where you can do a selfie after you do it. So there's all kinds of fun things. Air hockey one that is about harvest. And then we have a maker's lab. We have a farm tech shed where we're always bringing in new equipment, all state-of-the-art equipment, so people can get up close, live, personal, understand the magnitude and the enormity of some of these industry equipment. So, and then upstairs is a beautiful event space that overlooks the demonstration fields. 250 people can fit into this room in various ways. Certainly we have our observation deck. So lots of different wonderful things to have events here or spend the day. And to what Dick said and will continue to say, excuse me, I need a sip of water here. What Dick said is it's not a museum. This is a science and tech center. So it's not one and done. Right, you came here, you come back tomorrow when we're open and you all enjoy it. You come back in 3 weeks, 2 months, there's always going to be something different, always something ever changing. So that's the beauty of what we're doing here.
And Bobby, we're going to give you a chance to talk too, I promise you. But we need to take a short break here for our guests, Dick Pavelski, Kathleen O'Leary, and Bobby Kubish, as we talk with them about the Food and Farm Exploration Center. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Broadcasting live today from the Food and Farm Exploration Center with a great audience here to learn about the center and three guests, Dick Pavelski, Kathleen O'Leary. We've talked to them. We haven't talked to Bobby Kubish yet, so I want to get her involved. She's Director of Educational Programming. And by the way, I got entranced with everything and forgot to mention the phone numbers and how you can contact. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the audience and have a question, our live audience here, just raise your hand and Jill Nadeau will be around with a microphone and you can ask those questions. We certainly appreciate it and we look forward to hearing questions from you. But Bobby, you're Director of Educational Programs, and you come with, here again, great background with your work at UW-Stevens Point. And I got to imagine that kind of training played a beautiful role getting involved here.
I think so. At the time when they posted this position, I was not looking for a different job. The College of Natural Resources, my colleagues there, were they're really family to me, and they still are. However, when I saw the posting, I could check all the boxes. So definitely my experience in outreach with the Wisconsin Center for Environmental Education, my work with the Central Wisconsin Environmental Station, both as program manager and director there, interim director. And then I also was the coordinator of the College of Natural Resources Student Success Center for about 15 years. So again, the career piece within agriculture was a big box that the Pavelskis and the donors wanted to check as well. And outside of that, I really, what attracted me to this was the idea of building bridges and relationships within the community and connecting people who maybe weren't connecting or talking in the past. So that's one of the reasons I really enjoy this position right now. I really like Dick's philosophy is that we need to talk with each other instead of past each other. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the perfect opportunity and place to do that.
Well, maybe let's talk about some of the educational opportunities mm-hmm. that exist here. Maybe we start with, well, I'll let you start with where
sure.
you want to start.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Kathleen did a really nice job of talking about the exhibit space that we have, and I hope the audience will check that out before they leave today. But of course, one of our key players is the general public, trying to educate the public about production ag and agriculture in general within the state. The state... agriculture here in the state contributes $104 billion to our economy, so it is a very big player. And there's upwards of 400,000 jobs plus that are created through the various levels of agriculture. So we want to educate the public in general about what's happening and how their food gets to the table. One of the things that has surprised me, being most of my background in natural resources, is just the upgrades, the precision agriculture, the innovation that I did not have a good understanding of, and I'm learning more about every day. And I think that's something that's really important to us, to try to get that out to the general public as well as partners out there within the community. We've been doing that in a variety of ways. One of the ways is just getting people to walk through our fields that we have out there. We have 4 1.2-acre fields, and we have focus crops or cover crops that we have within those fields, and we invite the public to come in and walk through. Some public have never walked through a conventional field before, and so, you know, get out there, walk through them, ask us questions, and also take a look at the irrigation systems that we have. And you know, irrigation can be a bit of a hot topic here, we all know. We are not the experts on that. We bring in experts. But the precision in irrigation is really exciting. At one of the programs that we have tomorrow night, actually, at the doors open at 5:30, but at 6 p.m., is irrigation innovation. So learning from the experts about the precision in irrigation systems and in agriculture in general. So trying to work with the general public, families, getting them out here into the fields, talking to us, as well as adult educational programs like our irrigation program tomorrow night. We've had a series of programs all summer called Ag After Hours, trying to get adults here. We had the exhibits open for them so that they could explore them without their children present or other people's children present. And so that they could just kind of read and go through them, and we could be there for them. And some of the other topics that we've had within that was pollinators in production ag. And so trying to educate about that, not only general public, but growers, about topics not only like integrated pest management, but integrated pest and pollinator management, right? So what's up and coming? What is the research that we want to get out there? We've talked about just what is production ag and the economics behind it. We've talked about soil health. And we've had speakers from both UW-Madison and UW-Stevens Point to work with our adult population there. The other area that is really big and that is kind of our focus right now, because we want to get it right before we move on to too many other things, but of course, is our youth education program. So currently, we have a couple facets with that program where, number one is we provide field trips to the center. And as soon as we opened our doors in December, I started working in November, we opened our doors early December, and we have had over upwards of 80-some schools and youth groups that came through the doors. We've talked to over 5,000 children. And of course, I am not the one doing this. I have a wonderful education staff underneath me, 2 former ag educators, 2 elementary educators, and then a variety of just wonderful exhibit tech staff and our operations and exhibits director. So many, many people putting together these programs. So with the field trips, those have been very popular. Schools can come in and do open exploration, and they can also choose additional lessons that are directly related to various components of agriculture. And so those we call dig-ins. So that's an extra lesson throughout the day. We also do outreach to the classroom. So if a school is within 45 miles, we have an educator here that will go into the classrooms. And we really encourage the schools that come here to have our educators come into the classroom prior, and that way we can kind of prep them for what they're going to see and give them some foundational material. And with that, we've reached upwards of 2,400 students already going into the classrooms and about 30 classrooms that we've gone into. And we also offer downloadable lessons, so if a teacher or school is outside of that perimeter, we have wonderful lessons, and our ag educator is available to do a Zoom or a phone call with a teacher or a youth group if they want to know more. And as well, we have kits, what we call STEM kits, that are out there as well that teachers and groups can check out. And then lastly, probably one of our more popular programs that we've been putting on is through our partnership with Midstate, and that is our cooking classes and our beautiful kitchen lab. And I think that's one thing that you really can feel when the community walks in the center is their pride in this center. And taking classes, I was just participating in a class with Midstate this Saturday. I was assisting the chef. And the group had so much fun, and it was summer bounty, so it was taking all those vegetables that grow together, go together, right, and cooking them, and the class had a really wonderful time. And we, our educators at Food and Farm, are expanding those classes to teens and also elementary age kids and families, so that's been a lot of fun to do that as well.
Yeah. I was thinking, Scott Craven, a wildlife ecologist, and I have taught some cooking classes together, and as I looked at that facility there, I thought, man, I wish Scott and I had something like this right here.
Well, come on back. Come on back. Teach a class.
I'll have to talk him into
We're
coming
happy
up
to partner.
Here to teach a class. That would actually be a lot of fun. I want to, you know, both of you actually talked about the, well, three of you have talked about the advancements and the almost unbelievable technology that exists. Dick, I remember you talking when we were looking at crops and looking at small, somewhat blanking on, actually, pieces of equipment that you can fly them over the over a field, and they can pick up the individual plants' information.
Yeah, as I often say, you know, being a farmer today, the new technology that's being introduced to the farm is like drinking out of a fire hose, because there's just all kinds of things coming. One of the things that Larry, and you'll see a video downstairs, is now on drones and hyperspectral imagery. And we're now getting to the point where on any given crop, they can actually look at not only the nutrient level, but the nutrient flow within individual plants. You'll see a grading equipment that actually is not only, you know, it'll automatically grade defects like a green potato or a piece of rot or a bruised potato, but they can now actually also sense the chemistry within the potato, so we can sense glucose levels to make sure that your potato chips are the right color when they get to the plant. You know, the same type of thing is now happening with water and precision irrigation, as we mentioned. At Heartland Farms, by going to variable rate irrigation, which means that every sprinkler on those pivot systems is controlled separately based on how much water that soil and that plant needs, we reduced our water usage by about 25%, and we're actually producing higher yield and higher quality with that technology. So,
didn't that go back to some work that you had with NASA back quite a long time back?
Yeah, I do have a long and sordid career in this business. It actually was kind of interesting, because what happened is the original military satellite system lasted longer than they wanted, or than they expected it to. So the military got a new, that had definition at the Earth's surface of 3 meters. This would be back in 1975, 77. So they sent out some, offered universities grants to utilize that technology, because they were going to have their new military precision that had definition at the Earth's surface of less than a foot. And somehow I got a phone call from a professor out in a university out in Oklahoma that said, you know, I'd like to talk to you because, and we were already being involved in equipment that could do variable rate fertilizer applications. And we partnered up, ended up doing some stuff then with NASA and the university and utilizing that technology to drive variable rate application.
And so, you needed the equipment to be able to do that, obviously. If you know, you've got to have equipment that's going to be able to tell when it needs to be, what needs to be added when.
Yeah, I mean, so much has changed since then. One of the, you know, at that point in time, basically, we had soil tests, and we would go out and do, you know, a really thorough soil test. So typically in soil tests, you're pulling four samples on 40 acres. We were pulling as many as 300 on 40 acres, trying to get a much more accurate picture, and then drawing a map from there. And that was driving the variable rate application, so that wherever, you know, if you had a higher level of phosphate already in the soil, you would apply less if you had a... But the real issue that and how that's evolved now is obviously that was taking an average of what's in the soil, and soil tests are not always absolutely accurate. We found that you go to work and pull one soil sample, split it between three laboratories, and find as much as a 20% difference at the time. So, you know, and at the time, there were some companies come out saying that we can give you precision agriculture within, you know, 2 or 3%. I'm saying, no, I know better than that. But now, because of the sensor technology that's been developed by a lot of the space program, I mean, they're taking soil samples on the moon and things like that. We've got sensors, and that's what's really evolved most rapidly in the last 10 years is that sensor technology. They've gotten much better, much more accurate, whether it be soil moisture testing, soil fertility testing, or plant nutrient testing.
Amazing work. Dick Pavelski, Kathleen O'Leary, and Bobby Kubish are our guests today as we talk with them about the Food and Farm Exploration Center. Questions, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address, talk@wpr.org. And if you're in our live audience and have a question or a comment, just raise your hand and Jill Nadeau will be there with a microphone. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. We're broadcasting from Plover, Wisconsin today with a great audience and talking about the Food and Farm Exploration Center, which has only been up for how many months now?
About 8 months.
It's a fantastic facility. I think around 50,000 square feet of space for people to explore and learn a whole lot about agriculture, not only in this part of the state, but anywhere, as a matter of fact. You can join in. Questions, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. Or we'll take a question from the audience, and we have a question or two, so let's go there.
This question is for Dick. With much fondness driving back and forth from Wausau to Madison, I always saw the airplanes that took care of the pesticides, and I imagine with all your technology, you don't use that anymore, do you?
Yes, airplanes are still used along with ground application equipment. The newest technology that's coming on is drones, however. We can fly them much lower. We can get much more precision in the application. And because of the downdrift of the propellers, when we're flying that low, we actually get much better plant coverage and can reduce the amount of pesticide or plant protectants that we're using.
Yeah. Here's another question from the audience.
This is mainly for Dick as well. I know you were talking about the planes. I grew up and not grew up, but lived last 40, almost 50 years in Inigo area. And when we came and I was in the concrete business, we put an awful lot of pivot pads in the early 70s for the irrigation. I was just wondering now, with all the high capacity wells that you must be, the amount that's pumped out is amazing, because, you know, because of our soil content, people would say to me, how could they keep irrigating it's raining? And I said, well, because we have the state soil around Antigo silt dome, it could rain every day and you'd never get bogged down usually, but until time for harvest. But I was just wondering how are they addressing that, the aquifers, with all this high capacity pumping?
Yeah, actually, I mean, if you look at it, it's a pretty simple calculation. Wisconsin gets about, on average, 33 to 35 inches of rainfall a year. Crops, like potatoes, one of the biggest users, at about 17. Sweet corn, green beans will be down in that 12, 13 range. So from a, you know, and that includes the irrigation water, not only the rainfall that happens during the season. Trees actually are one of the biggest issues, because trees will use about 24, 25 inches a year. And further, they don't, because of any rain event that's over, you know, less than a half or three quarters of an inch falling on a pine forest, there's no recharge. None of that water, it stays on the leaves and the needles until it's evaporated, so there's no groundwater recharge. But basically, if you want to know what the groundwater table is here, you can just look off the deck, you'll see it. Groundwater in this area over the last 20 years has basically moved from it's all online. You can look at the USGS data. There's one at the Hancock Research Station. And I just looked at it the other day. Over the last 15 years, right now it's about 9 feet to groundwater from the soil surface. The farthest that it's been down is about 17 feet. And that's the fluctuation that you typically see between drought years, and you know, it was down to 17 after we had 4 years of well below average rainfall. Then we had 2 years and it came up, and for those that are locals, there's an area called Two Lakes, that's always Two Lakes Restaurant, we always referred to it as Two Lakes. And then for about 3 years it was referred to as No Lakes, because those ponds had dried up. And then 2 years after we had those 4 years of below normal rainfall, it's now referred to as Three Lakes, which is two lakes and a flooded basement. So it is a normal fluctuation. If you know history, back in the 1930s, my grandfather cut hay in the bottom of Lake Emily. That lake is typically, and I water skied on it all, so it's never been dry since, but it had dried up in the 30s when they had some really drought years. So.
Yeah, really interesting.
Do you mind if I add to that?
Go ahead, Bobby.
So one of the things that we really want to emphasize here is that this center is meant to be neutral and to educate. And what I mean by that is that we want to remain agnostic, so that all of our growers, regardless of what size they are, feel welcome here, but also you know, individuals that are researching water quality issues and other types of issues. So we want to be able to demonstrate the latest technology, and we also want to be able to have researchers come in and talk to the public and growers about what is happening with research, which is why I think having the demonstration irrigation systems here is really exciting. And the more the public knows and understands, and the more that even the researchers out there understand the way that the technology is moving, it will help them to create research trials that hopefully will benefit all of us. So our mission is to demonstrate what's happening out there, not to do the research, but to do the demonstration of what the latest and greatest is.
Well said. Let's go to another call, question from the audience. Hi.
Okay. Yeah. I was wondering, what is the role of the migrant workers in Wisconsin agriculture?
We do use some H-2A farm workers at Heartland Farms, but it's very minimal. It's really interesting, because at Heartland Farms now we've got about 140 full-time employees. And we'll bring in another 150 or so. And 90 of those are going to be truck drivers that operate, that are only there for about 10 to 12 weeks during harvest. And we actually, over the years, have gotten, you know, you'll get police officers and teachers and things that'll take time off just to work that harvest season for us. So, but we couldn't get enough of them the last couple of years. Before that, we were all locals. And now we're going to the point where, you know, we've brought, this year we'll have about 30 migrants that'll come in for harvest. But from us, they'll, a lot of them stay right in the area, and they'll go to Christmas tree trimming after they finish the potato harvest, and then they go to North Dakota for some sugar beet harvesting and
move on. Yeah. Thanks for that question. Another question from the audience.
Okay, this is for Dick also. I recently read in a publication that I get about some research going on in Canada about actually using seeds for potatoes versus cut potatoes. I was wondering if anything like that is going on currently here.
There certainly is some research going on, and yeah, I'm aware of the article that you read. Historically, when you tried to use true seed, you could never get uniformity because of the genetics in each seed would be different. So I'm not totally familiar with it, but I know there's some research going on actually using true seed versus cut seed.
Okay. And another question from the audience. Good questions here. Another question from the audience.
Mine's for Barb. I was wondering if we, I'm sorry, you're not Barb, are you?
Bobby.
Bobby, sorry. I was wondering if there were going to be classes for adults who just wanted to have fun with food.
Yes. So currently we are in the process of hiring a kitchen lab facilitator. So once we get that individual on board, that is our hope, is to offer a variety of classes ourselves along with Mid-State and hopefully other partnerships within the community. So definitely is a goal for us, for adults, for families, youth. And what I would say again, you know, going back to education, that really is the mission of this facility. A couple of things that we have up and coming that we haven't even talked about is we are in the works of putting in a greenhouse. And so we will be hiring a greenhouse tech and hopefully growing some of our own food that we'll use in our cooking classes and our cafe as well as we'll have a children's playscape eventually, I believe is coming that will be vegetable themed, of course. So lots of fun stuff coming, lots of ideas. As Dick mentioned, it's been like a fire hose in terms of ideas. So trying to build out gradually, what can we do well? What can we continue to improve on? And what are some areas that we can focus on? One partnership I do want to mention quickly is a partnership with a local community group, Farm Shed. And through Farm Shed, we, our director of operations, Heath, and others wrote a grant through the Community Development Foundation, and we were able to get macro bins. And so far, we've donated over 1,000 pounds of produce to Farm Shed that they can process and send to our homeless shelters within the community. Yeah. Give Heath a hand back there.
Yeah, if we could, I'd like to introduce Heath Dornfeld is in the back, manages the facility here. And next to him is Jen Scott. We mentioned about the outreach. Jen runs our outreach program that into the school system. Bobby runs the stuff in-house here from an educational standpoint.
It's amazing.
We've only been open since December, and we've had over 35,000 visitors through here, right? And as it is, you know, I mentioned technology in the farm. This place right now is kind of like drinking through a fire hose, right, too, because we've been growing, you know, so rapidly that we need some time to walk and staff up yet.
And we just filled up 2 macro bins on Friday of cucumbers that went to Farm Shed that are not included in that poundage. But I will say, coming in September, we're estimating the 16th through the 18th are more you pick days, where the community can come in and you pick first before we load up those bins, so you can have fun with food in your own kitchen. So we had a lot of people who were picking cucumbers and beans to can. So keep an eye on Facebook and other publications
For
and
that,
go to your website.
Go to our website.
Your website
the events
would be
page.
Where mm-hmm. the events page would be where you'd be able to go and do this. Somebody else in the crowd wanted to know, where does the money come from? This is a $40 million project you got here, and then there's upkeep and a great staff.
Yeah, the $40 million was raised entirely, we got $3 million from the state. The other $37 million was all from donors, the Warzella family, our Pavelski family, Heartland Farms, John Deere. The list is on the donor wall downstairs, but we had, it was really very, very humbling for me because I said this was going to be a much smaller kind of family project, and it seemed like everybody we talked to for a while, it's like, geez, we should have been doing that. How can I help you out? And they wrote me a big check. So that's where that came from as far as, building the facility. That money's all been raised. We do need to raise about $1.5 million a year is the projection through donations on an annual basis. We just launched a program now where you can sponsor a busload of children coming in and you'll see that. I don't know if the brochures are out yet, but they will be shortly. So that will be basically through donations as well. And then there's about another $1.5 million that comes from, or is projected to come from, the actual rental revenue and, facilities like this. I can't see back there, but I think Nevada is also back there.
Yeah, that's cool.
Nevada heads up all the rental and the facility.
It's a great opportunity for a lot of people. And Kathy in Denver, Colorado, I think has a question for you from Denver. Hi, Kathy. Oh, we lost her.
Hello.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I wanted to ask, I'm trying to get kids involved in the different STEM fields, and currently we have been doing Zooms, having different people take about an hour out of their whole life and talk to kids about their different fields. And one of the areas that we are looking at is like hydroponics and, growing plants and growing them in small areas and whatnot, and we want to do a little project. We get the families and the kid and maybe a parent or an uncle or an aunt, and they'll actually work with the child at home so it gets more family interaction, and the kids can be all over the country. And I wondered if I could reach out to you. I'm also looking at a NASA grant to help encourage the STEM field
sort of
and space related fields too.
Yeah, go ahead. Bobby, you want to answer?
Well, they can add on to this, but this is what we mean by the fire hose. There's so many awesome ideas that are coming our way. Kathy, you can absolutely reach out to us. We have a couple general emails. You could email education@fftf.us or hello@fftf.us, and we will be in touch with some ideas. Dick, you were going to add to that?
I think you just go to the, mm-hmm. if you go to the Expo Center, if Kathy or anybody else went to the
website,
the Exploration Center website, you're going to find the contact information.
Yep. Yeah, and we appreciate, career development is clearly a very big part of what we're doing here too. Agriculture, like a lot of other industries, is I think misunderstood as to what the career opportunities are here. Thank you, and yes, we'd certainly like to work together with on those career development programs.
Well, I want to thank the three of you for taking part in this today. The hour went by much faster than, it usually goes really fast, but today it seemed even faster than normal. Thank you so much. From the Food and Farm Expo Exploration Center, Dick Pavelski, Director Kathleen O'Leary, Cultural Transition and Culture Strategist, and Bobby Kubish, Director of Education Programming. They're doing a lot here, and it was fun to learn about it. And I hope you'll type in Food and Farm Exploration Center into your website, and you're going to get to see everything that's going on here. Weather always plays a big role, whether you're growing potatoes or peas or whatever it is. And we got a weather guy coming up, a local weather guy who's going to share what he knows about what's going on weather-wise here and elsewhere. Dick Pavelski, our guest, coming up. I'm Larry Mueller.